Chapter 16, The Champion of the World. It wasn't as dark as I had expected it to be inside the wood at this time. Little glints and glimmers from the brilliant moon outside shone through the leaves and gave the place a cold, eerie look. "I brought a light for each of us," my father said. "We're going to need it later on." He handed me one of those small pocket torches shaped like a fountain pen. I switched mine on. It threw a long, narrow beam of surprising brightness, and when I moved it around, it was like waving a very long white wand among the trees. I switched it off. We started walking back towards the clearing where the pheasants had eaten the raisins. "This," my father said, "will be the first time in the history of the world that anyone has even tried to poach roosting pheasants. Isn't it marvellous, though, to be able to walk around without worrying about keepers?" "You don't think Mr. Rabbit's might have sneaked back again just to make sure?"
"Never," my father said. "He's gone home to his supper."
I couldn't help thinking that if I had been Mr. Rabbit's and if I had seen two suspicious-looking characters lurking just outside my precious pheasant wood, I certainly would not have gone home to my supper. My father must have sensed my fears, because once again he reached out and took my hand in his, folding his long, warm fingers around mine. Hand in hand, we threaded our way through the trees towards the clearing. In a few minutes we were there. "Here's where we threw the raisins," my father said. I peered through the bushes. The clearing lay pale and milky in the moonlight.
"What do we do next?" I asked.
"We stay here and wait," my father said. I could just make out his face under the peak of his cap. And the lips were pale, the cheeks flushed, the eyes shining bright.
"Are they all roosting, Dad?"
"Yes, they're all around us. They don't go far."
"Could I see them if I shone my light up into the branches?"
"No," he said. "They go up pretty high and they hide in among the leaves." We stood waiting for something to happen. Nothing happened. It was very quiet in the wood.
"Danny," my father said.
"Yes, Dad?"
"I've been wondering how a bird manages to keep its balance sitting on a branch when it's asleep."
"I don't know," I said. "Why?"
"It's very peculiar," he said.
"What's peculiar?"
"It's peculiar that a bird doesn't topple off its perch as soon as it goes to sleep. After all, if we were sitting on a branch and we went to sleep, we would fall off at once, wouldn't we?"
"Birds have claws and long toes, Dad. I expect they hold on with those."
"I know that, Danny, but I still don't understand why the toes keep gripping the perch once the bird is asleep. Surely everything goes limp when you fall asleep." I waited for him to go on. "I was thinking," he said, "that if a bird can keep its balance when it's asleep, then surely there isn't any reason why the pills should make it fall down."
"It's doped," I said. "Surely it will fall down if it's doped."
"But isn't that simply a deeper sort of sleep?" he said. "Why should we expect it to fall down just because it's in a deeper sleep?" There was a gloomy silence. "I should have tested it with roosters," my father added. Suddenly the blood seemed to have drained right out of his cheeks. His face was so pale I thought he might be going to faint. "My dad would have tested it with roosters before he did anything else," he said. At that moment, there came a soft thump from the wood behind us.
"What was that?" I asked.
"Shh!" We stood listening. Thump.
"There's another," I said.
It was a deep, muffled sound, as though a bag of sand had been dropped to the ground. Thump.
"They're pheasants," I cried. "Wait, they must be pheasants, Dad."
Thump, thump. "You may be right, Danny." We switched on our torches and ran towards the sounds. "Where were they?" my father said.
"Over here, Dad. Two of them were over there."
"I thought they were this way. Keep looking, they can't be far." We searched for about a minute. "Here's one,"
my father called. When I got to him, he was holding a magnificent cockbird in both hands. We examined it closely with our torches. "It's doped to high heaven," my father said. "It won't wake up for a week." Thump. "There's another," I cried. Thump, thump. "Two more," my father yelled. Thump, 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 thump. "Jeepers," my father said. Thump, 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 thump. All around us, pheasants were starting to rain down out of the trees. We began rushing round madly in the dark, sweeping the ground with our torches. Thump, thump, thump. This lot almost fell on top of me. I was right under the tree as they came down, and I found all three of them immediately, two cocks and a hen. They were limp and warm, the feathers wonderfully soft in the hand. "Where shall I put them, Dad?" I called out. "Lay them here, Danny. Just pile them up here where it's light." My father was standing on the edge of the clearing with moonlight streaming down all over him and a great bunch of pheasants in each hand. His face was bright, his eyes big and bright and wonderful, and he was staring around him like a child who has just discovered that the whole world is made of chocolate. Thump, thump, thump. "It's too many," I cried. "It's beautiful," he cried. He dumped the birds he was carrying and ran off to look for more. Thump, 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 thump. It was easy to find them now. There were one or two lying under every tree. I quickly collected six more, three in each hand, and ran back and dumped them with the others. Then six more after that. And still they kept falling. My father was in a whirl of excitement now, dashing about like a mad ghost under the trees. I could see the beam of his torch waving around in the dark, and every time he found a bird, he gave a little yelp of triumph. Thump, thump, thump. "Hey, Danny," he shouted. "Yes, I'm over here. What is it, Dad?" "What do you think the great Mr. Victor Hazel would say if he could see this?" "Don't talk about it," I said. For 3 or 4 minutes, the pheasants kept on falling. Then suddenly, they stopped. "Keep searching," my father shouted. "There's plenty more on the ground." "Dad," I said, "don't you think we ought to get out while the going's good?" "Never," he shouted, "not on your life." We went on searching. Between us, we looked under every tree within 100 yards of the clearing, north, south, east and west. And I think we found most of them in the end. At the collecting point, there was a pile of pheasants as big as a bonfire. "It's a miracle," my father was saying. "It's an absolute miracle." He was staring at them with a kind of trance. "Shouldn't we just take about 6 each and get out quick?" I said. "I would like to count them, Danny."
"Dad, not now."
"I must count them."
"Can't we do that later?"
1, 2, 3, 4. He began counting them very carefully, picking up each bird in turn and laying it carefully to one side. The moon was directly overhead now and the whole clearing was brilliantly lit up. I felt as though I was standing in the glare of powerful headlamps. 117, 118, 119, 120, he cried. "It's an all-time record."
He looked happier than I had ever seen him in his life.
"The most my dad ever got was 15, and he was drunk for a week afterwards," he said. "But this, my dear boy, is an all-time world record."
"I expect it is," I said.
"And you did it, Danny. The whole thing was your idea in the first place."
"I didn't do it, Dad."
"Oh, yes, you did. And you know what that makes you, my dear boy? It makes you the champion of the world." He pulled up his sweater and unwound the two big cotton sacks from around his belly. "Here's yours," he said, handing me one to fill up. "Fill it up quick." The light of the moon was so strong I could read the print in front of the sack. J.W. Crump, it said. Keston Flour Mills, London, SW17.
"You don't think that keeper with the brown teeth is watching us at this very moment from behind a tree, do you?" I said.
"No chance," my father said. "If he's anywhere, he'll be down at the filling station waiting to catch us coming home with the loot."
We started loading the pheasants into the sacks. They were soft and floppy-necked, and the skin underneath the feathers was still warm.
"We can't possibly carry this lot all the way home," I said.
"Of course not. There'll be a taxi waiting for us on the track outside the wood."
"A taxi?" I said.
"My dad always made use of a taxi on a big job," he said.
"Why a taxi, for heaven's sake?"
"It's more secret, Danny. Nobody knows who's inside a taxi except the driver."
"Which driver?" I asked.
"Charlie Kinch. He's only too glad to oblige."
"Does he know about poaching too?"
"Old Charlie Kinch? Of course he does. He's poached more pheasants in his time than we've sold gallons of petrol."
We finished loading the sacks and my father humped his onto his shoulders. I couldn't do that with mine. It was too heavy for me.
"Drag it," my father said. "Just drag it along the ground."
My sack had 60 birds inside it and weighed a ton, but it slid quite easily over the dry leaves with me walking backwards and pulling it with both hands. We came to the edge of the wood and peered through the hedge onto the track. My father said,
"Charlie boy,"
very softly, and the old man behind the wheel of the taxi poked his head out into the moonlight and gave us a sly, toothless grin. We slid through the hedge, dragging the sacks after us along the ground.
"Hello, hello, hello," Charlie Kinch said.
"What's all this then?"